Welcome to the Harshman Travel Radio Show segment on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Pamela and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Harshman Travel Radio Show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Pam and Ron's success as entrepreneurs has allowed them to pursue their passion in the travel industry. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio Show and learn about Pam and Ron as they discover the joy that comes from being part of the travel industry. You might have a chance of working with them in their business ventures and your travel plan. So listen in and enjoy the journey. Now on to our Building Fortunes Radio Show with Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles. Let's get started, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. It's a Friday night. It's 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and every Friday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, we do a radio show with great friends of ours. Their names are Pam and Ron Harshman. They own Harshman Travel, and if you go to harshmantravel.com, you'll be able to see the cool website that they have. But we started doing a radio show with Pam and Ron several years ago. Matter of fact, when we almost got started with Building Fortunes Radio, I was looking for some great guest hosts, and Pam was successfully building home-based businesses, and she was the perfect person to work with. She was somebody who was very attentive, super smart, you know, very good with the follow-up. And I said, you know, if anybody's looking for a home-based business, they probably want to work with Pam. So I invited her to be a radio show guest host, and she said, no, we're not going to be building home-based businesses anymore. She didn't say it like that. I was just adding a little bit of enthusiasm there. She said, no, we are probably going to become travel agents. And I said, huh. That really stinks in a good way. I mean, good because you're going to become travel agents, but I was hoping that you'd be able to do a radio show, and I'm really good at fitting things into position. And I just said, you know, a lot of people in home-based businesses, they want to travel, and they're always looking for, you know, great deals and specials and great attention to detail and follow-up and follow-through, and maybe we could do some radio shows on that. I mean, travel is on everybody's wish list that likes to travel, and a lot of people would be very interested in that. I know how great you are at this stuff, and I know you'll bring that kind of an attitude towards whatever you're building in the travel industry. So, you know, people will be available to the greatest service they possibly can get. So we started doing this radio show, and what I wanted you to do first, if you're a new listener, is to learn a little bit about their background so you can have the confidence that I do in the things that they do. And the second part of the radio show is where Ron gets a chance to cover some of the newer stuff that's happening in the travel industry. And that's probably, you know, maybe the most important segment for you because things have been changing like crazy because of COVID. So we've been doing the radio show before COVID. We did the radio show during COVID. And I think I'm almost about to say we've been doing the radio show, you know, even after COVID. So we're going to see what happens on the second half with Ron. But let's do introductions first. So, Pam, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having us again this Friday night. And, yes, COVID has kept us busy trying to keep up with the positives and negatives and the unknowns. A little bit about my background is I started my working years as a 911 dispatcher up in the Pacific Northwest. Did that for several years and slow but sure worked myself up into court administration and absolutely loved it. However, I then met my husband and I moved down to join him down here in sunny Florida, so all the way cross country, kitty corner. Once down here, I didn't want to start down at the bottom of the ladder again, so I was looking for something that would allow me to work more independently and hopefully work from home. Ended up getting my realtor's license, followed by my broker's license, and sold real estate in South Florida for several years. And then just slow but sure, that was kind of not my niche, and I wasn't enjoying what I was doing, so I went and got my life and health insurance license and sold Medicare supplements to the senior population. Absolutely loved it. Loved going to visit with the seniors, loved being able to give them good information. A lot of them didn't have computers and stuff like that, so being able to answer questions about their health care for the rest of their life, which is probably one of the most important things for a senior. Anyway, I did absolutely loved it. However, I also started seeing different little carrots dangling in front of me on my Facebook news feed about home-based businesses, MLMs, and I did do several of those, had some winners and had a couple losers in there, but I certainly learned a lot, and that is where we met. I was a customer of yours, and we just hit it off and have been very good friends ever since. But one day during my travels, one of my friends gave me a call and asked if, out of the blue, as a matter of fact, asked if Ron and I had ever thought about becoming travel agents. And it just struck a chord with me because it hadn't been just a few days prior to that that Ron and I were actually talking about being empty nester baby boomers, and our health was good. If we wanted to travel, now was a good time. And where did we want to go? You know, we were kicking around all that good stuff. So when she said that, it was like, oh my goodness. So I couldn't wait to get home. Ron and I sat down. We talked about it. We did some research and decided to go forward. And we got all the training and licensures that we could get our hands on and that we needed. And in the long run, we have probably traveled a whole lot more than we would have been able to do otherwise. And at the same time, we've helped an awful lot of people stretch their travel dollars. And it's just been a really good, positive thing for us until COVID. And then that just kind of killed everything. And I will let Ron explain what's going on with that later.
Okay, good. Excellent. Okay, good. So, Ron, over to you.
All righty. Thanks, Peter. Good to be here again with you. My background is very different from Pam's. I spent many, many years as a licensed clinical psychologist, very heavily involved, obviously, in my own clinical practice, but also became very entrenched in the whole self-regulatory aspect of the profession. I was elected as chair of the Applied Division of the Canadian Psychological Association, so sat on that board of directors, sat on several ethics boards and professional affairs committees, ended up being elected as a life fellow of that association. So put in a lot of time, a lot of effort, and learned a lot about the inner workings of various professions, and it wasn't only psychology. You could also see the overlay with many of the other professional associations and ethics and all that kind of good stuff. So it was a good learning experience, a good giving back experience, and I enjoyed that thoroughly. In my own clinical development, I was very fortunate in both my undergraduate and graduate years. I had a number of professors who very strongly made the point that if you were thinking of going into private practice at all, it was really essential for you to first gain as much varied clinical experience as you could, working with different clinical populations, seeing different kinds of life problems and struggles, because they made the point very clearly that when you do go into private practice, you know, you advertise, you go in the yellow pages and hang out a single, etc., but you really don't have any thorough control over who's going to call you, what problems they're facing, what assistance they're looking for. And they made a very strong point that if you did not have a good, varied clinical understanding and background experience, you could end up doing people a lot more harm than good. And that that message really struck home with me. I decided in my undergrad years that I would start finding employment even while I was going to school, and ended up working in pretty much every one of the social service delivery systems, from alcohol and drug abuse to corrections to inpatient mental health to child welfare, etc. And it really proved to be a good decision, because when I did go into private practice, I certainly felt very well prepared to handle the different situations and problems that people were bringing to me. After I'd been in private practice for a relatively short period of time, I found myself really beginning to specialize working with young couples, people who were looking at premarital counseling, sexual counseling, a lot of marriage counseling, a lot of work with young kids with learning disabilities, etc. And as I became more and more involved in that with that population, unfortunately, I also ran into a number of situations where we had young couples who had a pretty solid lack of maturity, who had gotten married, things weren't working out the way they wanted, and very clear evidence of belonging to the throwaway society. They were going through divorce, and unfortunately, in too many cases, we had very immature parents seeing their kids as the last possible battleground that they could fight with their about-to-be-ex-spouse over. And a lot of destructive stuff on both sexes, mothers trying to turn their kids against their fathers, fathers trying to turn their kids against the mothers. And I became very involved in the whole legal process. And just by coincidence, had nothing to do with anything other than just the timing, when I got involved working in that arena, I found that there were some major changes taking place in the legal aspect. The courts up until that time, both in Canada where I was practicing at the time and here in the States, had pretty much adopted a predisposition with young couples going through divorce and having disputes over custody and access. And the predisposition was too often that the courts would grant custody to mommy, visitation to daddy, and in many cases that worked out fine, but in too many cases we were seeing a lot of research and a lot of casework where it was not only not a good situation, but in many, many cases it was turning into a very bad and destructive predisposition. And I was fortunate at the time because I was working in Canada, and in Canada the Divorce Act is a piece of federal legislation, which basically means that all divorces in Canada are handled at the Supreme Court level in every province. Well, what that translates into is a lot more formality, a lot more regimentation, a lot more standardization of how things are handled. And very fortunately in Canada, the Supreme Court judiciary, the judges sitting on the Supreme Court across the country in the different provinces, have very strong collegial relationships. They have semi-annual conferences, and usually the summer conference is the one that they really get into the meat and potatoes, and usually come back from that conference with some very firm ideas and changes in procedure and policy. And the year that I started getting involved, the judges came back from their Banff conference, having made the decision based on the experiences that I was just talking about a few minutes ago, that going forward, any decisions about child custody and access made in the Supreme Courts had to be based on the psychological best interests of the children involved. And that was a very, very fortuitous decision. It was a very correct decision. It was a meaningful decision. It was followed very closely here in the States as well. They made the decision and began actualizing it immediately. They had a little bit of bumps in the road because they were not able to really determine how they would get to a clear understanding of the psychological best interests of the children. The justices themselves couldn't do that based on what was going on in the courtroom, because in the courtroom you had two attorneys representing the litigants, and they had the professional responsibility of trying to present their client's case and argue that their client should have whatever their client wanted. So the justices were getting very biased reports from that end. The justices themselves had no interest, time, or ability to evaluate the psychological best interest. And people working in the courts likewise did not have the training or the experience or the expertise to do it. But we are very fortunate because very quickly after the justices made that decision, we found that there were two brand new subspecialties developed very quickly, one in the School of Clinical Social Work and one in the School of Clinical Psychology. We had a number of practitioners who really felt a calling in this area, and we were able to form some meaningful work groups, and I was very involved in that whole process. But we very quickly came up with some standardized ways of conducting custody evaluations where it was very heavy. We would have to interview the husband and the wife, obviously mother and father. We would also have to interview the kids together and individually. We'd have to see the kids operating with mommy and with daddy. Interview a lot of the corollary folks involved in their lives, whether it was neighbors or relatives or school teachers or school counselors, ministers, priests, rabbis, etc. And after doing that thorough investigation, you also had to be prepared to go into court as the court's witness, not as a hired gun for either attorney, but go in as the court's witness and give your recommendations, etc. And obviously have one attorney who was very favorably impressed with you and sung your praises, and the other attorney, had the legal responsibility and the professional responsibility to try to tear you apart and tear down your report, because obviously you were coming in with recommendations against his or her client. And many practitioners just didn't want to get involved in that, but there was a group of us that saw that challenge and really dug our heels in and developed a good process. And I was one of the first psychologists in Canada to be appointed by the Supreme Court to represent the psychological best interests of children involved in disputed custody cases. And after being in Canada and doing that for a good number of years, a number of circumstances came up where Just coincidentally, I ended up in South Florida working with a psychiatrist there who was doing a lot of criminal forensic work. He was very, very impressed with what I was doing up in Canada, very interested in it, knew that the American bar was moving in the same direction as the Canadian bar, and there was nothing going on like that in Florida. So he invited me to give up my practice in Canada and moved down to South Florida and introduced the whole concept in the South Florida courts. So I do have the honor of being the first mental health practitioner to be appointed in both Dade and Broward County courts to represent the psychological best interests of children in disputed custody cases. Very, very challenging work, but very, very rewarding work. And it came at the end of a pretty varied clinical practice, as I say, working in pretty much every one of the social service delivery systems. Anyhow, after Pam and I got together, we were in Southeast Florida. We decided to retire. We moved to Southwest Florida, began raising alpacas. As Pam said, she started to get involved in the MLM home-based business arena. And although I wasn't interested in that, I was very supportive of her doing it. But when she came home and said she really wanted us to sit down and seriously talk about the possibility of becoming licensed travel consultants, it was a very meaningful discussion because from my perspective, as Pam said, we'd already talked about the fact that if we wanted to travel, which we both did, we better get with it. It was the right time, etc. But from my own perspective, I saw the possibility of taking the same approach, the same skills, etc., that I had spent and used in my clinical career, always working with families that were going through life stress situations, going through divorces, kids going off to jail for drug abuse, etc. And as a travel consultant, we would be able to be working with people, turning on lights, holding up mirrors, helping them make decisions, but it would all be positive life situations, couples planning weddings or anniversaries or multi-generational family vacations or retirement parties, 50th wedding anniversaries, etc. So we did look into it, did a lot of research, decided if we were going to do it, we would do it the right way, and obviously we made the decision to move forward. We also made the commitment that we would take the time and energy to find those vendors that we felt most comfortable working with and supporting. And it has worked out very, very well until COVID came up, and even since then it's been a different struggle, but we certainly see things moving in a certain direction that hopefully will bring back at least some sense of normalcy, and things continue to move in that direction. So although it's been a big bump in the road, and there's been a couple of years where things basically came to a total dead stop in the travel industry, we are seeing things turning around. So that's where we are.
Excellent information. We're going to do this. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Ron's going to take as much time as you need, Ron, on the other side to talk about what's new in the travel industry. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Miegel. This special segment can be heard again with almost any device connected to the Internet by going to buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Listen in often and get to know Pam and Ron. Go to the buildingfortunesradio.com website to listen in to the show. No matter where you're at in life, you can benefit by listening to and by working with Pam and Ron. Let them book your next cruise, vacation getaway, or group event. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio and witness their ability to pursue their dreams in the field they love. Thanks for listening. And now, back to the Harshman Travel Radio Show.
And we are back. Make sure you check out harshmantravel.com, harshmantravel.com. There's no extra charge to use their great service. And Ron's going to cover some of the other things and some news. So, Ron, over to you.
All righty. Thanks, Peter. A number of interesting things happening within the last couple of weeks. Probably the biggest news is that the CDC has decided very generously to stop all of the COVID-19 warnings about cruises, et cetera, et cetera. We have talked on this show a number of times about the very obvious, at least to me, very obvious attempt on the part of the CDC originally and initially to, in essence, destroy the cruise industry. They came out with rules and regulations that far exceeded any rules or regulations that they imposed on any other aspect of the travel industry, and really initially came out and warned people that being on cruises was like a death sentence. Definitely, if you have any plans, cancel them. If you're thinking of making plans, don't, etc. And we saw that going back and forth for over a year in terms of the travel industry generally, the cruise industry specifically, trying to get along with the CDC, adopt as many of their rules, et cetera, as they could and still survive, and try, endlessly to get the CDC to come around. Well, with this latest ruling, it's interesting to see, we're not going to get into the whole issue of politics, but I do have to make the comment that typical of the present administration, the CDC is now trying to play, you know, guys on a white horse. They are making a point and making the attempt to ease up all the rules that they are previously imposed upon the cruise industry, and admitting that the cruise industry and the cruise line specifically are capable of their own rules and regulations and mitigating COVID, et cetera, et cetera. So they came out with this within the last few days. And as I said, the positive thing is, yes, they have reduced all and eliminated all of their requirements of the cruise industry. The not so interesting and somewhat sickening part is that they're trying to play, you know, nice guys on the white horse, and they're doing this out of the goodness of their heart. In reality, they're doing it because the cruise industry indicated to them and proved to them that in spite of all of their attempts, the cruise industry was here to stay. People want a cruise. People want a vacation. And it was a forced time. Interesting to note that the governor of Florida has not given up his stance on the legal fight to stop the cruise lines that are operating and functioning in out of Florida ports of call to drop any regulation and requirement for vaccinations. As I have said a number of times on the radio show previously, and I'll repeat it now, I think that we're stuck with the regulations and requirements for vaccination until we see some of the class action lawsuits that are slowly but surely working their way through the federal courts. Once those lawsuits get resolved in a fairly predictable way, that they are going to find that it is unconstitutional to demand that people give up their rights regarding their own health care. But until those decisions come down, I believe that the mandate for vaccinations will remain in place. At the same time, the good thing is, and we're seeing a number of examples again just in the last few days since the CDC came out and dropped their regulations, we see Virgin Voyages, Azamara Cruise Lines, Norwegian Cruise Lines, Carnival Corp, all of those different cruise lines, and Royal Caribbean as well, and MSC are all taking the position that they are dropping their requirements for COVID testing prior to embarking, except in those locations around the world where the local government requirements are still demanding that there be the COVID testing. But everywhere where it's been up to the cruise lines, they have now all basically dropped any requirement for negative COVID testing prior to embarkation. They are still requiring vaccination, however, and as I said, that I don't expect to see lifted until we see some resolution in the courts. The interesting thing that I think is coming out also, just in terms of a lot of the medical journals, a lot of the most frequent people coming down with COVID and COVID diagnoses, they are finding that in many, many of those cases, the people are contracting the virus from people who have been vaccinated. So I think that is, again, adding to a number of the medical studies that have come up with a number of negative side effects of the vaccines, heart conditions, blood conditions, people, you know, women having problems with conception, men's sperm counts, etc. All of these things are coming to light, and I fully expect that we will see, again, Peter, you and I have talked about this, I'm still pretty confident that our latest idea of time frame is still pretty accurate. I think by early to mid-2023 is when we can expect to see some major changes. The rest of 2022, I think we're going to see some cracks in the wall and some things like the removal of all of these requirements for pre-embarkation COVID testing. But I think we're still pretty much on track that early to mid-23 is when we're going to see a major move. And by the end of 23 into 24, I think we will see a pretty close return to the normalcy that we saw before. So that's what's going on the COVID side. A couple of other things that we've talked about and some updates. I have mentioned on a number of occasions that I really felt positive and hopeful about the fact that Disney Cruise Line was staying pretty much away from the craziness happening with the Disney Corporation. And in the last couple of weeks, we are seeing some proof of that. The latest, newest ship that's coming on board with them, the Disney Wish, they are trying to make that not only a kids' ship, but also an adult ship. And they are really integrating the old Disney ideals, and people are certainly responding to that. They just had some events on the ship, and they found that as soon as they opened the doors for people taking pictures with the Disney characters, there was a large movement from the participants wanting to do that and wanting to keep alive the Disney of old. So we're still positive about what's happening with Disney Cruise Lines, and they are also going to be expanding where they are sailing from. A couple of their new ships coming on board in the latter part of 2023. Disney Cruises will finally be departing from South Florida, Port Everglades in Fort Lauderdale. They will be having 4 or 5 night cruises going out of there. The Disney Magic is moving to the West Coast. They will be coming out of San Diego and doing 2 to 7 nights to Baja and the Mexican Riviera. And starting in the fall of 23, the Disney Wish and the Disney Fantasy will continue sailing from Port Canaveral to ports in the Bahamas and the Caribbean. So I'm very, very pleased with that and very hopeful that we're going to see that split maintained. I think it's, we can spend a lot of time talking about how crazy things are happening with Disney Corporation and Disneyland and Disney World. And I had major concerns and fears initially that that might also have an overspill to the Disney Cruise Lines, and I was very happy that it wasn't, and I'm very happy to say that all indications now are that that split is going to be maintained. So that's very good. One of the other things, we've talked a number of times about the financial moves that are being taken by Carnival Corp, the largest cruise line corporation, which owns 10 different cruise lines, by Royal Caribbean, and by Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings. And along those lines, where we've seen the expansion of funding, etc., Carnival Corp just announced that they have commenced the underwritten public offering of $1 billion worth of shares of common stock. And that's interesting because they are having they're giving the underwriter a 30-day option to purchase $150 million of additional stock, and all of this money is being designed and aimed at taking care of 2023 debt structure. So we are certainly seeing the leaders of the cruise industry proving their viability and their moxie in being able to grow to the extent that they have. And in spite of everything that happened as a result of COVID, they are going to survive and they will be bigger and better than ever before. Last thing I wanted to talk about, it's just an interesting thing I came about. It also has to do with Carnival Corp, actually with Carnival Cruise Line. There's a retired couple from Virginia, and they just celebrated 1,000 days at sea on Carnival cruise ships. They have been the Norwegian fjords. They've been, basically around the world with Carnival, and their goal was, according to the wife, to sell everything we owned and pretty much live on cruise ships, and they have done a pretty good job of that. They were asked, when did they start cruising, and they said 20 years ago when their kids were still at home. And at first we cruised because it was a great value, and now they are just enjoying it. And when you think of it, 1,000 days at sea, when most cruises are, 5, 6, 7 days, sometimes 10, 14 days, to celebrate 1,000 days all on Carnival, I think that's quite an accomplishment. The interviewer asked them, and I thought this was cute, they said, would you spend another 1,000 days at sea? And the wife's response was, if we live long enough, we will. So just to let people know that people do enjoy cruising. They are committed to cruising. Along that line, just as a final footnote, I want to remind people that we have talked about it before. A number of the cruise lines are reporting that a good number of their present bookings all the way into and including 2024 are from people new to cruising. These are not just people who have cruised all their lives or cruised for the last several years and want to get back to cruising. But in spite of all the negative, hodgepodge that was floating around about cruise ships being dangerous for COVID, et cetera, all of the cruise lines are reporting that a good number of their bookings are from people who are new to cruising. So everything is looking positive from that perspective.
Great news. So it looks like everything is heading in the right direction, or lots of stuff heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
So it looks like our projection, if you will, for 22 being kind of, questionable, somewhat flat, but maybe upstart towards the end of 22, but 23 being a better year, definitely on track.
I think so.
Definitely on track. Really great stuff. Well, good.
Yeah.
Okay, so make sure you check them out. If you go to harshmantravel.com, harshmantravel.com, you'll be able to see the website. And if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/harshman or Harshman Travel, you'll be able to pick up these previous radio shows. And I know there's a lot of people that I've been speaking with that are just like, I'm done. I'm out of here. I'm going on vacation. Like, that's it. I'm done. I'm ready to go. So there's lots of people that are in that mood. So we're going to catch everybody next week on Building Fortunes Radio. And thanks.
Good week. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, everybody. Yep.
Okay. Good week, everyone.
Okay. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show segment on Building Fortunes Radio. with your hosts Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear previous radio shows with Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Pam and Ron's success as entrepreneurs has allowed them to pursue their passion in the travel industry. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio Show and learn about Pam and Ron as they discover the joy that comes from being part of the travel industry. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.